want you to think of a time when you were the stranger. When you were the stranger and hoped someone would say, "Stranger, share our fire." Think of a time when you were new somewhere. I know for a few of you that may well be today. You're here for the first time, welcome. And you can think of this or another time that you were a stranger somewhere. But if you come to this hall as a regular, then think of another time that you were a stranger. Maybe a new job, a new town, a new school. Maybe you walked into a recovery meeting for the first time. Maybe you were traveling somewhere away from home. What were you feeling when you were a stranger somewhere? What thoughts? Did you have questions? Or were you so unsure about what was going to happen that you didn't even know what questions to ask? What fears? Were you anxious? Did you worry about being rejected? Did you wonder if you were in the right place, if you would do the right thing? What hopes? Did you hope to make a new friend? Did you hope that it would be as good as you heard or as you imagined? Hope that this would be what you were looking for? If you're like me, then you probably had all of these when you were a stranger somewhere, thoughts and fears and hopes. As I was preparing for this message, of course, I thought of so many times that I've been the stranger. One particular memory came back to me. It was about 12 years ago, during my first year of seminary in Chicago. For a little less than a year, I had been dating Morgan, now my wife. Morgan was still in college in Washington State. And Morgan's mom and Morgan's four aunts all lived in the upper Midwest, in Wisconsin and Illinois. Morgan's sister, a student at Beloit College, was in a play, and so I got invited. I wasn't that far away, and I'd met Morgan's mom and Morgan's sister, but none of the other aunts or the rest of the family. Morgan wasn't going to be there. She was 2,000 miles away. But I said, sure, I'll meet a bunch of people I've never met before, and it'll be fine. So I took the train to meet one of the aunts, and then all the rest, the big family meal and the play, and I was a stranger. And I couldn't for the life of me remember which aunt was which. It didn't help that their names were Chris and Kate and Connie and Kai. It was hard to tell which was which. But I was warmly welcomed and included and even loved. And they showed interest, but they didn't grill me with a lot of questions. And I was not, thankfully, the center of attention that was reserved for the literal star of the show, the actress. It was a good experience of being the stranger, of moving from stranger to part of the community, from unknown to known. I've had bad experiences too. Showed up nervous, anxious, and found everyone absorbed in their own selves. Not hardly a hello for me, the stranger. I've been asked, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" In that tone of voice, you know, the one that means go away. How many of you have ever been the stranger and had a good experience of being welcomed? Tell me some words about what that was like, word or phrase. Just go ahead, shout it out. What was that like?
Eye contact.
Eye contact. Welcoming. Warm. Yeah. How many of you have ever been the stranger and had a bad experience of being welcomed? Word or phrase, what was that like? Chef? Isolated. Threatening. Sad.
Army boot camp.
Army boot camp, right. The experience, the difference between these experiences is a big deal, isn't it? One feels really good, the other doesn't. Most of the time, of course, our experience is more middling. When we are the stranger in a place, parts of that are good and parts of it are not. It can take a while to feel included, depending on our personality, of course. We might feel right at home, or it might take years. And sometimes that has as much to do with us as it has to do with the people we're trying to join. I see that with church all the time. Some folks come once a month for 4 or 5 or 10 years before feeling part of the church. Other folks come 6 weeks in a row and feel right at home. Here's a question for you. When you thought of your experience of being a stranger somewhere, remember that experience, how much in common did you have with the other people there? Did you speak the same language? Did you share a culture, have similar expectations about manners and time and social cues and so on? Were you the same generation? Did you have socially about the same amount of power as they did in society, or did you have less or more? When we are the stranger, this question, how much do we have in common with these others, this question may have very little to do with the quality of the welcome. This is important. I know that I have been profoundly welcomed and included by folks who did not look or sound like me at all, who shared my culture not one bit, and yet the welcome was genuine. And I have been treated rudely and dismissively as a stranger when the folks that I was trying to join were culturally almost identical to me. So it doesn't matter the quality of the welcome about that cultural gap. It can be different, but I'll tell you what, that cultural gap between me and others sure affects how I feel beforehand. My thoughts, my fears, my hopes. And this I know is true for almost everyone. When we appear more or less the same as the folks to whom we are stranger, then our anxieties are often less. We feel more comfortable. With less anxiety getting in the way, it can be easier for us to stretch ourselves. For the stranger has a role to play too in the quality of the welcome. Are they open? As the stranger, we are more prepared to risk and to reach out when we are more comfortable. From this pulpit over the last 4 years, I've often talk to you about the concept of privilege, and white privilege in particular. I've identified illegitimate privilege as the ability of those in power, the ability that they have to be ignorant, to not know, to assume that they, and I should say we, for I am part of that class, to assume that we are normal, that our culture is superior and normative. What does this have to do with the experience of being a stranger? Everything. I sometimes get nervous in social situations when I'm the stranger. I can be awkward sometimes, it's true. But I was raised by my parents and my peers, and most of all by our wider culture. I was raised to believe that I was welcome pretty much anywhere, that I belonged. That as a reasonably tall, white, well-educated, middle-class, able-bodied male, I could go anywhere. I had authority anywhere. I could be confident anywhere. Though I might be new to a place, I was never truly a stranger because the world belonged to people, to me and to people like me. That's what I was taught. Every day I worked to unlearn those fictions, work to use my unearned power for the good of others, and to lay aside my sense of being normal, my ability to have ignorance, and to renounce my illegitimate privilege. Here's what this has to do with the experience of being a stranger. When you walk into a place where you are new, and you are culturally different from these new folks, and you are not perceived to have as much social power, well, then the experience of being the stranger is heightened considerably. More thoughts and questions, more fears and maybe more hopes too, but guarded ones. When your culture teaches you that you are not welcome here, that you are not welcome among these people, then these people who do wish to welcome, who do wish to be counterculturally inclusive, then we have to work extra hard to show that. Why must our hospitality be radical? Because to welcome another takes intentionality. And to welcome someone who is, on the surface at least, different than you takes extra intentionality. It takes laying aside our conventions of what normal is. It takes renouncing our privilege. It takes work to ensure that we see the stranger not as a number, not as an endangered species, but as a human being. Not to erase cultural difference, for that is another form of imperialism, but to respect it, to know and honor it, and to go to the root of our common truth. In this world, we are all humans, we are all strangers, and we're all brothers and sisters. When Kimberly showed me Square Cat, I thought, oh, that's perfect, right? Because Ua, the square cat, she is not perceived to be normative. Round cats are normal. But her friends are kind, and they want to include her. So they try first to assimilate her, to make as similar to them. Round, like they are. Hoop earrings, rouge on the cheeks. And this is our usual strategy. We will welcome the stranger by faithfully teaching them our rules and making them as much like us as possible. People even wrote and still write church books about this. Effective practices in new member assimilation. So on. Resistance is futile, right? Assimilation might be hospitality, sort of, but it isn't radical. It doesn't embody my personal commitment or this church's commitment to be an anti-racist, anti-oppressive, multicultural community. What do Eula's friends try instead? Well, they make her feel welcome by becoming more like her, by recognizing that round isn't normal either. And then they see that there are advantages to being square. It's the only way to lie on your back and see the sky. If there was a sequel, it would be this. Ua would say, thank you for showing your solidarity with me. It has helped me to trust you. And now, you should be yourself. I'll be myself and you be yourself. And we should see that there is no normal, and that we can all be ourselves and celebrate our different gifts and our common lives too. Instead of assimilation, inclusion. The stranger shares our fire and becomes part of our circle. Our circle becomes wider still. The movement of the love that frees till people of whatever race or nation will truly be themselves. Stand on their feet, see eye to eye. Here is the theological claim, the spiritual claim, the practice of radical hospitality, of welcoming the stranger as they are, of celebrating the great variety of culture at the exact same time, celebrating the common humanity we all share. This habit, this work of radical, intentional, soul-stretching, privilege-renouncing hospitality, this is practice. Embodiment, rehearsal for the world we want to live in. Unity in diversity, inclusive pluralism, welcome as you are. Ours is no caravan of despair. If we cannot practice this in our church, then how will we ever make it real in the world? If we cannot do it in our own heart, how can we ask others to do it in theirs? Martin Luther King Jr. called it beloved community, or another older phrase, the kingdom of God. And our religious ancestors understood that kingdom, that commonwealth of love, was not somewhere else, sometime else, but was right here and now. And it was made manifest in how we treated each other, in how we were together as community. Not, of course, that any community of people would be perfect, for no one is perfect. But in the beloved community, in the radically hospitable community, we act out of love, not guilt. And we are, as the song said, forgiven and forgiving. We'll talk more about forgiveness next week and the central role that it plays in this, but I want to make clear that we don't have to be perfect. We'll make mistakes, and then we'll do better. It is this ancient theological understanding that the beloved community, that divinity, that grace is here and now, that paradise is here and now, and we manifest it in our daily living. This idea is central to the writing and thinking of Rebecca Parker, the author of our other reading this morning. Right before the conclusion to her essay, which I read for you, she wrote this paragraph. Congregational life can provide a base community for the restoration of humanity. In my childhood, she writes, the church was the primary institutional setting in which racism was publicly named and its effects actively resisted. Social justice is an incarnational event. It mends the split of mind from body, individual from community, neighbor from neighbor. End quotation. This idea is so important. Social justice is an incarnational event. It's not abstract. It's about daily life. And it is a chance, as we see the whole selves of others, to see and put together our own whole self, without guilt, without shame, without self-denial, for these things don't help. No, we act, as Parker wrote, out of love and passion, out of a desire to be whole, and our recognition that others, too, are whole people. Our commitment from the bottom of our feet to the tips of our fingers to be in real, loving relationship with a person who stands eye to eye before us. We have all in our lives been the stranger from time to time. We have all in our lives been the host from time to time. When it is our turn to host, I hope we remember what it is like to be the stranger, the thoughts, the fears, and the hopes. I hope most of all that we will hold in our heart and in our head, but primarily in our heart, our vision of the beautiful world and the beloved community, a place where we can each be ourselves, where our common humanity is affirmed, but so is our individual identity. Our culture, our lives, our loves are important too. Where we are, where we with power use our power to open the door to say with our voice, stranger, share our fire, for you are welcome here. This vision, our hopes for the world of peace and love, this vision is not abstract. It's about how we live each day. And we have the power to incarnate, to make real our dream for the world, to make the beloved community, the promised land, into this place, here and now. So let us journey to that awareness and journey together to that land. We're going to sing. It's 10:18 in your teal hymnal if you read the music and want to, and the words are also up here. I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.